Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski. An over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name, again, is J.R. Radcliffe, and sitting across from me here in studio at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel top secret offices, it's Jim Ozarski, Bucks reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Jim, thanks for joining me today. The Milwaukee Bucks, they haven't played in a while. Of course, as we record this, it's on Monday. They'll be playing Monday evening against the Atlanta Hawks, the team that they just saw a few days ago, the same team that handed them their first loss of the season. Oh, no, they've lost two of three. They started out, 9-0, and now they're 10-2. They're still the only team in the NBA with two losses. In fact, there's only one other team in the NBA with three losses in the Boston Celtics. So the Bucks are still sitting very, very pretty. But the big concern over this road trip, Jim, is that they stopped playing Giannis and Drew Holiday altogether. Drew Holiday tweaking his ankle, spraining it in Atlanta, and has not played the last two games. Giannis has also sat out three of four. And you know what? The way that we knew there'd be some maintenance with guys like Giannis and presumably Drew and even Chris Middleton, just any of the veteran guys on this team. So Giannis sits out a game, it doesn't raise an eyebrow. Giannis sits out back-to-back games. Now we're talking about something that might be very real. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I think he's probable as we sit here and talk about this on Monday. And then Drew Holiday is definitely out again for a third straight game going into that Monday game. So that seems like a little bit of a concern. So we're back on talking injuries at the start. We'll get to Chris Middleton and Pat Connaughton too. But what's the situation here? Like how worried, how loud should the alarm bells be for Bucks fans right now?
All right, we'll start with Giannis. And I broke this timeline down for folks with the game story, if you will, the analysis of the game in San Antonio. It was the third in 4 days he had missed. He played in Atlanta November 7th and did not look himself. That was the first loss of the season. Hawks defenders were literally jumping over his back to dunk on him for offensive rebounds. I think he was 9 of 20. Didn't look good. He did not warm up at his normal time at that point. He warmed up really closer to game time, and obviously they didn't tell me why that was, but my assumption would be is he was getting some sort of late treatment that pushed everything back, and then he didn't play the next two games. So the reason I mentioned the timeline, JR, is I saw him on November 2nd during his warm-ups. He kind of cut his warm-ups short or paused it because he grabbed that knee, and then the next day he was listed as probable. You know, so really, JR, if you go back to that Detroit game on November 2nd, his shooting, while wasn't great to that point, has totally cratered.
Yeah.
Like in the 40% range. So he's not, you know, Giannis is the guy who will tell you with a straight face, dead in your eye, that I feel 100% while he's got a harpoon through his neck.
What a way to put
it.
You
know what I mean? Like he's a football player in that way. But results are results, and you missed three of four in the one game you played. It was kind of eh. So what does that mean? Look, we record this. He might, now that he's had a week off, essentially, he may drop 45 on the Hawks and look good. So I'm not going to say there's always going to be knee concerns with Giannis. Last year, JR, just for people to remember, he missed right knee. He had right knee soreness is what they called it, and he missed, I would say, the most of his games with the right knee. And it was a couple years ago. It was in the championship season where he had to grab the knee in Portland, remember?
Yeah.
Drop 45 on the Blazers and then miss like 12 games.
Mm-hmm.
So this, unfortunately, if you're a Bucks fan, this is what it is. Giannis is going to miss 15 games. It's just a matter of why. And last year it was right knee, it was a quad and a calf. This year, he's starting off with the left knee. We'll see. Drew Holiday, actually, JR, last year, this trip, San Antonio, little mini Southwest trip, he rolled the left ankle in San Antonio, and he missed like eight games at the start of the year, and he dealt with it all season. He missed, I think it was left ankle, yeah, because it's right ankle this time, was like most of last year. I saw him in the locker room in Oklahoma City, and he was just like, I mentioned that to him, and he goes, I thought the exact same thing. I should have just skipped this trip.
Yeah.
So that's a real thing. Like, he really turned it in Atlanta. So I could see them. You know, the good news is no walking boot. You know, he went through a shoot around in Oklahoma City. He was initially ruled as doubtful, went through the shoot around, out since. But again, no walking boot. He looks okay. I was out there on the trip. Not discernible. Like, he's not on a crutch, you know, but that doesn't mean it's a imminent return to play for him. So Giannis, we'll see as we go here. Drew, I think for sure they're going to wait till he's, you know, not at a point where there's a weakness in there where he comes back, plays a quarter and a half, and then whoop, there it goes. And now we're dealing with this thing for, you know, weeks upon weeks.
Yeah, and we're still in a place where they're shorthanded with no Chris Middleton, you know, no Joe Inglis, of course, too. That's still an after the first of the year situation, but no Pat Connaughton. And we saw those guys on the trip, so we know they're hanging out with the team, but it doesn't feel like we're any closer to getting resolution. And that really, so right now they're 10-2. You can't say it's hurt them necessarily in the win-loss column. There will obviously come a point where that probably will be the case if they continue to be out. And then furthermore, they're playing with like 10 guys. Like, Brook Lopez is averaging 31 minutes a game. There's no optimistic scenario that would have foreseen that. At some point, they've got to give Brook Lopez some rest. The man had serious back surgery last year. So they don't have the bodies. I mean, Javon Carter, who we will talk about, he is the patron saint of this podcast, is an absolute superhero, but he can't score 36 points every night. So, like, they need actual people. What is the update, if any, on Chris and Pat? Like, when are they going to start getting these guys back?
Yeah, Pat, it's interesting. So Minnesota was about week three, and that was what the team said. Like, hey, 3 weeks, kind of reevaluate. When I talked to him there, he was saying that he still feels it in that right calf. So once he starts doing some certain activities, the next day that right calf is sore. And for the Bucks medical staff, that's essentially a no-go. He's got to be able to do basketball, wake up the next morning and be able to do basketball again and not feel it. He said he's frustrated with how long it's taken. He actually admitted that he probably needed to have been shut down a little earlier in the preseason, and he tried to, you know, fight through it, and here's where he is. So I think that's already informing how they're handling this with him.
Sure.
So we're coming up on 4 weeks. You know, again, my gut was early November was this trip. I think that's what they thought would happen. So, man, it's tough. I mean, it's hard to really speculate. Same thing with Chris Middleton at this point. I wonder if they're just sort of kicking the can down the road because they are 10-2. It's a schedule where they can beat the San Antonios and the Oklahoma Cities,
yeah,
and the Detroit Pistons without them. Look, if they were 5-6. You know, I don't know. I don't know. Because, again, JR, this is like the whole thing. When I thought they'd be 5-6 to start the season, you know, they maybe don't matter as much. But to your point, I asked Brook Lopez about that, the 31 and a half minutes, and he's like, hey, those other teams I was on, even the last couple of years, that wasn't my call to only play 25 to 27 minutes. So he's like, I'm good. I don't want to come out. And Mike Budenholzer was like, yeah, as a coach, I probably should be more mindful. But, like, when it's just Brooke,
mm-hmm,
I mean, they're gonna ride that guy a little bit. And, you know, he doesn't seem to mind. He seems no worse for wear. I've seen him in all these post games, JR. He doesn't look any sort of different. Like, oh, man, I played 46 minutes in double overtime. Like, you know, he was ready to rock, you know, right after that double OT in Oklahoma City. So, you know, on one hand, you're right. 10 guys is not ideal. And it's really 9 3/4 because Thanasis really hasn't gotten a ton of run here. Neither has Sandro. So it's really like 9 8 7/8. I mean, so yeah, it would help if guys could start coming back, even if they're not on full minutes, just to spread things out a little bit.
Brook Lopez with 32 blocks this year, far and away the leader in the NBA with 2.7 blocks per game. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. The man is just a brick wall right now on defense, and he's giving them everything he's got. 31 minutes a game. That's crazy stuff. It's pretty good. So I mentioned Javon Carter. Is he the best player on the Milwaukee Bucks?
As of, you know, San Antonio, yes, because he was the only, you know. I think what's funny is he's
Amir Mortal, 21 points in that game.
Right, yeah. Carter. I mean, he sort of went viral a little bit for his post game, you know, after that OKC game. And
what's up with the post games?
You know, where he's like, yeah, I woke up this way. he elaborated a little bit for me after that, where he's just like, no, I kind of – basically, his mindset is this is what I'm ready and able, prepared to do if asked, if needed. And he sort of said that's not – the opportunities for this are not going to be there because when the big three – plus Brook Lopez are on the court. Javon Carter's probably getting four shots, and they're going to be three-pointers, not, you know, drive to the lane, kick, and dish. So I think what this shows a little bit, JR, and we don't always see this in basketball. You do sometimes. It's more like the third-string running back who you give them 30 carries. All of a sudden, you're like, wait a minute.
But the offensive line block's great for everybody.
Right. So, the backup point guard or the second point guard, however you want to phrase it, isn't always given the opportunity to put up 20 plus shots, play 40 minutes. They needed him to do that. He did it. I think it's interesting to see that he did do it. Because that's the thing. You could say, well, you know, oh, of course, he played 40 minutes a game. He had these. Look, we've seen plenty of players have 40 minutes a game and not make the shots or not make the right decisions with handing the ball off. We've seen him do that. So I don't see how it's definitely not a bad thing. His role will change again. It'll revert back to what we saw the first, you know, handful of games when everyone else comes back. But as Bobby Portis said this morning, JR, like these minutes matter to guys like that. Look, even if George Hill and Wesley Matthews are 15-year veterans, is it bad that they're playing 28 minutes together? Probably not, because in a month, 2 months, when Giannis misses three or four, or Chris, or something, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Those guys are going to have, as Brook Lopez said, the reps for that, those lineups matter. And Brook specifically talked about the Oklahoma City game, JR, where they threw it to him in the post, and it was, all right, big fella, go get a bucket. He told JR, he's like, I haven't done that in a long time.
It's different.
Like, it's one thing to, like, post games, oh, Brooklyn Brook, you had some baskets in the post. Like, yes, but no. Like, it wasn't 15 on the clock, big fella, we need it, go get it. He's like, I haven't flexed that muscle in so long. Even Budenholzer laughed. He goes, yeah, like, that's very, very rare for him with us. So, like, and he goes, I don't know when I'll have to do that again, if ever, but I've done it now, and it was kind of good to do it. So I think JR, like, I know we started this with Javon Carter, but, yeah, like, that's
in jest.
I think if you're a Bucks fan, if you're going to look for silver linings, you saw some players asked to do different things. They responded to the best that they could. Did they lose in San Antonio? Yeah. But they won in Oklahoma City, you know, and so that's not a bad thing. And maybe later, if asked upon, they'll be able to hit a shot late, you know, run a play for them late, or guys miss again. They can, you know, it's like the fifth starter in baseball, right? Get us through. Get us five innings.
Yeah.
And they did that.
Sometimes they'll run a play with, you know, less than a second left, get the ball to Brook, and he'll draw the foul that ends up forcing an extra overtime. Could have won the game, but that double overtime game in Oklahoma City was quite bananas. I think it's probably a coin flip game. The fact that they won is great. The Bucks had some adventures in that game. Obviously, they were shorthanded and all that, but interesting road trip to say the least. They do again. They come home with a 10-2 record. But another reason, though, that I bring up Javon Carter, and obviously I was jesting about him being the best player, but he is one of the best shooters on this team right now. He's one of the rare guys from three-point range who's over 40%. He's at 42%. Grayson Allen is right there. He's just a notch higher, like 43% basically. Nobody else is shooting the basketball here. And I say this having seen, you know, some rumors over the weekend that the teams were contacting the Bucks about Grayson Allen. We've talked a little bit off mic that if the Bucks do make a trade now or at the trade deadline or whenever, Grayson Allen's probably going to be the involved party. He's the most tradable piece that the Bucks have based on, you know, based on contract and based on how valuable he is to the Bucks. So it's just right now, like, he's the only guy who's making shots. And I don't know if that's an alarm bell situation that nobody is making shots. You know, I think Bobby Portis would be quite a bit better. We were, you know, clamoring for him to be in the three-point competition earlier this season before the year. It's not been quite that good. And certainly when you've got lineups that maybe aren't going to be working together all year, it's easy to see how there could be some hiccups. But it's just been a struggle. I don't know if that should be concerning at this point or not.
Yeah. There's two things there. So real quick on the shooting. On one hand, you want to say veteran team with years of track record.
Yeah.
That said, we were saying that last year when George Hill ended up having the worst shooting spot of his career. Now, there were things went into that physically. Wesley Matthews, you know, Giannis, you'd think, would shoot better from the free throw line, from the field. We don't know where, obviously, Chris Pat and Joe Ingles will be when they return. They're getting open shots. Now, some of the ones they've missed have been like, ooh, hit the side of the rim, hit the back iron. Like, all you can say with that is...
Shouts to Marjon, by the way. That guy,
Marjon actually, you know, he's gone the other way where he started off missing and now has made some of his threes, which is really good.
But George Hill, like you mentioned, has gone in reverse where he started out decently hot after a couple games.
There's a part of me that feels like you've got to wait till, you know, just a longer sample size to see what's what. Now, this feeds into the Grayson Allen thing. I've been doing this so long. Like, I know fans get all fired up about, you know, teams calling about ABs. Literally, it's their job. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, it is John Horst and Milt Newton's job to call everybody and see who's available, who would you want, who's this, who's that. Like, when the Kevin Durant stuff popped in the summer and Woj is like, every team called, of course they did. Of course they did. Right? Like, that's so. Like, I don't mean to diminish excitement over potential acquisitions or guys getting departed for fans, but, like, I'd actually be more concerned if you'd be like, you know what, the Bucks are not calling anybody about anyone. Now, Allen is the essentially the one movable piece. He's making, $9 million this year, like 10 or 11 next year. He's a young player. He's coming off a career year, one of the few 27-year-olds they have on the team. if you're going to get something, you have to give something, and he's really the only something you have. I know, Bucks fans want to do the trade machine of the Costanza. I figured out how to get Bonds and Griffey and not give up that much. Like, guess what? Like, Jordan Wara plus isn't getting you anything. Mm-hmm. Serge is on a minimum deal. Wesley's on a minimum deal. George is making $4 million, but no one wants right now a 36-year-old backup point guard who's had to have cortisone shots in his neck. Like, if he was shooting 48% from three, maybe. But then the Bucks would say, actually, we kind of want that guy around.
Of course.
Also, for reminders for people, Grayson's the only guy who could be traded, like, today. All these other players can't be dealt until either mid-December or, in worst case, mid-January. It's just the rules of the contracts. So, if anything, maybe calls are being made because it's like, let's see where we're at in February and what do we like, who might be who, and there we go. So the Bucks would be a worse team today, JR, like if they traded Grayson Allen in the middle of the week or next week. They're a worse team. Depending who you get back. Like, it's if you're trading for the 3-and-D, I know people, again, we addressed Jay Crowder, like, you're worse. You'll be better defensively maybe in the playoffs, but, like, until then, Jay Crowder's not as good an offensive player. And actually, people, I don't know if you know this, Grayson Allen actually is the best individual defender currently on the Bucks. His rating is, like, 93.9. Yeah.
No way. That's fantastic.
It's like him, Marjon, and then Giannis. Now, obviously, that means, like, Grayson, I think, fits really well with what they do as a team. Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously, yeah, Boston, that is what it is. That I still don't think that's his fault. But, you know, it's just one of those where, of course, he's going to be in conversations because, like, just by the math, JR. He kind of has to be.
Yeah. I still wonder. I just don't know if he'll be here at the end of the year. You know, like, they're not going to move him this week. They're not going to move him next week. But I wonder, him and Jordan Wara, who I don't think we've seen take any step forward on defense, I don't know if those guys are here at the end of the year. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Wara's making like $2 million. Like, it's, you know, it's got to be a package kind of thing. Again, with who? There's that, you're moving multiple people. If you're talking about that, or like some other kind of multi-team, whatever. So, Allen, the way I look at it, JR, is this. They could not score against Boston. They couldn't score. So, I don't know why you would want to move one of the players on your team who can score. Like, they're playing good defense. He's playing good team defense. I mean, you got to tell me who's coming back. It can't just be like, Cherry Grayson Allen. Like, to me, Jay Crowder is... okay, fine.
Yeah.
You know, but like, that's, you got to tell me that all your dudes, all your horses are ready to go. And Chris got hurt in the playoffs. That's the thing, right? Like, going into the postseason last year, you'd be like, oh, let's trade so and so. Be like, all right. Well, then one of the big three went down, and you're like, oh, this is like 1980s basketball.
Yes.
So I don't know, man. Like I get it, but. Someone's got to tell me who's really coming back. And right now, Jay Crowder's not really moving the needle for me.
How about on the other side of the ball when it comes to three-point shooting? Because you wrote about this at jsonline.com. It showed up on Monday morning about how the Bucks have changed the way that they defend three-point shots. This is a common refrain from fans. Oh, my gosh, they let all these three-point shots happen, all these open three-point shots. You got teams setting franchise records in three-pointers made every once in a while against the Bucks, with the idea being you sacrifice that to be unstoppable near the rim. And that has worked for them, quite honestly. It's worked. But there is that vulnerability, and we're seeing less of that this year, at least in the early going. So give me some thoughts on some TLDR stuff out of this story. Of course, we want you to read it, but give me some of the Cliffs notes.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Finch, the Timberwolves, let's just put it this way. He said it best. He's like, yeah, they were kind of let you have that three-pointer, and it burned them last year in the playoffs with Grant Williams.
Yes.
And then he followed up by saying this year they're guarding that more honestly.
So Grant Williams is the catalyst for all this.
Essentially, you know. And they said, I talked to Derrick Rose and Bojan Bogdanovic and Josh Giddey and, you know, a lot of these opposing coaches too, with how the Bucks have changed. And that's basically what they're doing. Like, on the most simple level, they're just paying more attention. They're not sagging off and letting that one or two guys be that wide open for a three-pointer. The bet was, and was always, they won't make enough. And what was their winning percentage? Like 60-65%? So, like, you know, that proved to be true.
Yeah.
And then I think they just finally were beaten up enough last year. Even though Brook Lopez wasn't there, that, like, that wouldn't have changed. Like, they were still playing the same defense. And again, what Finch said, it was like, now the driving kicks don't look the same because the guards are playing far more closer together. Yes, Giannis is helping, but Giannis isn't totally abandoning his three-point assignment. If his guy's in the corner, his guy's on the wing, he's not crashing all the way down. Neither is Bobby Portis, neither is Marjan Bochan, whoever the, you know, they're still relying on Brook Lopez quite a bit. And actually, Mike Budenholzer said, look, we're probably leaning on him more than ever. And what does that mean? It means, okay, pick and roll, guy is going to the rim. They're just letting Brooke or Giannis or Bobby or Serge just kind of handle that. And basically it's like, well, if you can score over them, more power to you. Whereas in the past, someone would come help off that point. And then there was your kick out, JR. So, yeah, they are not only allowing fewer total threes, which is a thing, they're allowing fewer total makes because they're closer. They're not as great a look. They're allowing the fewest corner threes in the league. Now, this sample size, JR, I cut it after 10 games because
you lost Drew.
That was
point.
Drew Holiday in the 10th game. Giannis only missed one. And really, like, it's not fair.
Yeah.
It's just not fair to compare what happened that OKC game, Santo, going forward here without two of your best defenders and also, you know, like three more starters that are missed. So
literally two players who could be first team All-NBA.
Yeah. So I think like we'll see like it. Those these numbers as people listen to this are going to backslide a bit until those guys are healthy. But I think it's important. Go jsonline.com. Bookmark that page. Seriously. And read it. And then let's loop back to it later in the year when they get their full group. Because the total numbers are not going to look that stellar between now and whenever all these guys are healthy. But it's a big change, JR, and I think it sets them up for a more successful postseason, even if one of the big three is missing. This defense, I mean, one of the big three was missing in these first 10 games. No Chris Middleton.
Right.
Not, you don't have your sixth man. And they still were able to do this, so I think that's a promising note for Bucks fans.
The Bucks will, again, face Atlanta Monday night. Wednesday, super interesting game when the Cleveland Cavaliers come to Milwaukee. I mean, I think that's probably one of the better matchups that they've had this year. You know, they had those couple really early good tests early, and it's been, I mean, no offense to teams like San Antonio and Atlanta and Oklahoma City, but those are teams that should theoretically be outside of the, you know, not the top teams that the Bucks are going to be competing with for, you know, certainly for the Eastern Conference Championship or anything like that. But I don't know if that's lost a little bit of its luster since Cleveland has fallen off that hot early pace. But, you know, this is still a fascinating matchup. Donovan Mitchell has really, I think, added something to what they already had cooking, and they've got this great young team around him. So I guess, are you looking at that as a marquee matchup? I mean, it could be that they are missing so many people, it doesn't really matter. But you know, I'm going to the game. I'm interested.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, put it this way, Cleveland's going to consider it a marquee matchup, and they want to win the game.
Sure.
You're right. Well, the Bucks, if they lose, you know, they won't be happy. But if Drew Holiday isn't playing, no Chris, if Giannis is still dealing with his knee, maybe Giannis doesn't play. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I mean, Cleveland's still going to care about beating the Milwaukee Bucks in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. So for them, it's going to matter. And yeah, I think it shows something. Look, it's easy to forget this with the way Cleveland finished after Ricky Rubio got hurt and Jared Allen got hurt, but they beat the Bucks up last year. Yes, they got rid of Lauri Markkanen, and they went, you know, they have fewer bigs. You know, they got Robin Lopez to sort of back up, but they're not really running that same huge lineup that they did a year ago.
Right.
But Donovan Mitchell's an all-star. Darius Garland's an all-star. Evan Mobley could be an all-star or could be all-defensive team this year as a second-year player. So it's a legit – that's a squad, JR. And again, as I said in the preview podcast, they want to win games. So, you know, I know it's early, but depending who plays for the Bucks, yeah, we'll take it with a grain of salt. But Cleveland's for sure coming in trying to make a statement and win a game. And so to me, that means that's going to raise a level for whoever does play for Milwaukee. And it should be fun.
Bucks will head out to Philadelphia to play the 76ers a couple days after that. So some interesting matchups on the docket for this week. They are back at home against Portland. I believe that's Monday again of next week. Jim, let's move into our feature of the week. It's a repeat, one that we've already done this year. We've got some new uniforms to discuss. So let's go in the paint.
Right up in here, we'll make a happy little cloud. Use just the corner of the brush. This is where you can make all kinds of little shapes and little fluffy things.
Bucks unveiled their Blue City Edition jerseys. There are so many jerseys, Jim. Like, I had forgotten that there was still a jersey to be unveiled, quite honestly. This happens every year where there's sort of new stack of threads. City Edition jerseys, the intent here is to tie it to the community, tie it to the city where you play. And Milwaukee, I think, I personally think did a really good job with this one. They kind of went outside the box and in a way that I think is sort of highlights some of the emphases that the Bucks have had over the years, and highlighting something in the Bronzeville neighborhood, this mural, which I think is really, really fascinating. It's the primary color is that Great Lakes blue, which they wore during the championship season, notably actually against the Hawks in the playoffs. But okay, give me your thoughts. We are Jersey. Well, we're not really Jersey people. I'm more so than you maybe. But give me your thoughts on the City Edition, the Gathering Place jersey that the Bucks are going to be wearing on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't, like, I'm not a, yeah.
That's how you feel about every jersey, isn't it? It's fine.
Yeah, I just, and maybe because, like, do the Bucks have a classic look, JR?
Oh, man, I don't know.
See, that's where I go with this because, like, I love classic looks with a singular dominant color, and then your trim. It's very old school. Mm-hmm. You know, think about the iconic jerseys. Any sport, iconic helmet, like that's kind of where I go.
Simplicity.
And yeah, and I get the care, and I get the thought that all these teams have put in. I do think it's weird that Golden State would put the flower on their jersey, but yet that's the part of the jersey they like everyone tucks in, so you don't see it anyway. Like yeah. I thought that would if you're gonna do the thing, like put it somewhere else, but whatever. And I get it. Like I think Detroit's is cool. I love the thought behind it. There's just a lot, and then they kind of
get
rolled out on a fairly regular basis. We're like, didn't we just do this? With the purple and the – so that's the other thing where I kind of get – I don't want to say overwhelmed, but it's kind of
– well, oversaturated.
I oversaturated, feel like getting, yeah, that's the word. Yeah.
Because there's new ones every year, which on yeah. one hand I like. It's almost a be careful what you wish for. Like I love alternate jerseys. I love the idea of teams experimenting. I love the idea that each year there's something that you haven't seen before, and I really love the concept – behind City Edition jerseys. I love doing something that's tied to the community and that you don't have to pick just one thing because what's this year's? You know, the first time they did Great Lakes Blue, it was a nod to the lakefront. Perfect. That's a major, like, top three thing you think about when you think about Milwaukee. Previous to that, the Cream City jerseys, which I think people really loved, and I loved them too. I didn't even know the Cream City brick tradition that, you know, was into some of the early architecture of Milwaukee. I mean, I thought that was a great pull, and I loved the color was a little unique. I like this because this mural is not something that I would have thought of. It's this mural that's been around for a while, but it's been touched up lately, and I like kind of integrating that stuff. And I like that the Bucks are paying attention to it. But at some point, you're just like, man, like I don't even remember which jerseys were when, and like the Mecca floor jerseys, what were those? Were those, you know, like was that just 1 year? It gets to be overwhelming. Yeah, what?
Because in the moment you go through the thing. This means this.
Yeah, it's all subtle stuff.
But then, do you remember that a week later, a year later, 2 years later?
Yeah.
I
don't think so.
I don't know.
I think it's like we got to a point where it's a dream for somebody who likes alternate uniforms. Like, let's have a bunch of new ones every year. And then got what I would have theoretically wanted. And now I'm sort of like, okay, here's more alternate uniforms to talk about and little details. And this color means this. And then this patch means this. And these words mean that. And you know, it's getting to be a bit much. I think the NBA would also say to it, well, it's just a few games. Like we're not yeah. you know, reinventing the wheel entirely. When the Bucks are hoisting the championship trophy, they're not going to be wearing anything other than the jerseys that the association or icon jerseys, you know,
right.
to use their terminology. That seems very important. They're just going to be doing their normal thing. So it's probably not worth hand wringing over. But I do think we've reached a saturation point. There are a lot of jerseys getting thrown at us for every team, for every NBA franchise.
Yeah, and so maybe it's good for a team like the Bucks who have seen to have different looks throughout its 52 years. So there's not a, you know, different generations have a tie to different looks or color schemes or whatever. Maybe, yeah. But I'm just kind of like, I don't know. It's interesting to me. I guess like, and I'm not a jersey collector. I have some from what I had when I was a kid. They're the Bulls Reds.
Yeah.
You know, I know Bulls fans. I remember when those first alternates came out, the black with the pinstripes.
Yep.
And there's some association in the championship years with that, like the 72 and 10 year. But I don't. I mean, you don't really see those.
When you picture Michael Jordan, he's wearing a red jersey.
Yeah, and maybe that's the point. Like the classic looks, you see those. Whereas the Bucks, I guess you do see a smattering. Like in San Antonio, I saw some of the blue ones. But again, I don't know which blue ones those were. You know, but it's, yeah.
It's not just the NBA. You turn on Oregon, you know, they're
wearing. Yeah, the NFL's getting in on it. You know, finally changing the helmets to match their. Actually, I was about to say throwaways. That's not what they're called. They're Thursday afternoon color rush.
Yeah,
called throwaways. Now you know how I feel about those.
It's true. Yeah. So still a big fan of alternating uniforms. I enjoy the different looks, but You know, and I think you see that even in the stories that we write, that there's less and less interest in the new ones. Like, okay, another New Jersey. Yeah. Sure. All right. You know, you're only going to see for a few games and then not again after this year. You know, I think we even saw Dustin Godsey tweet out. He's a I should know his official title before I invoke him, but I think he's the chief marketing officer. He had invoked that, or he had tweeted that they can't go back to the Cream City jerseys, and I don't even know why that is, but I would assume it's because they used them once. You know, the whole point is to move on to a new jersey right. each year, and that's too bad because I know a lot of people like those, and I'm sure you can still buy them someplace, but they're not going to be on the floor. All right, Jim, any other thoughts before I send you away?
No, make sure just to go over to jsonline.com/deal, hook it up. Sign up, and you can follow us on all various social media platforms, including, I do got to throw this out, JR, and if you are part of the hashtag Twitter migration, you can find me on all the other, most of the other various ones, Counter Social, Mastodon, Tribal, Discord. Yes, I am on Discord, so you can, I feel it's worth saying, for those who may or may not, I don't know if Twitter will exist by the time you listen to this, maybe it will, I don't know.
Yeah, so, for a little while longer.
So subscribe to us and follow JR and I and Lori Nickel and Ben Steele. And thank you for that.
If you send a message on Mastodon, is that a Mastodon? Like the way it's a tweet on Twitter? Like, what's the?
I have no idea what they call it.
I did also sign up, but it didn't go well. I'm very confused on how to find other people, and I'm probably abandoning ship already. But I guess I am technically on Mastodon. You could find me there if you wanted. Good luck at getting anything out of that. But thanks for listening to us. Find in addition to all the stories at jsonline.com, find the Bucks newsletter, the automated newsletter that'll send some Bucks stories to your inbox. You can also find this podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Of course, all the usual places. Thanks for tuning into the Point Forward podcast. We will be back with you again next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.